Hello, podcasters. Got a great show for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about Ilhan Omar, an update. And if you haven't seen it, if you haven't seen the special we did, make sure you go to YouTube where you can watch it, or you can watch the entire episode at blazetv.com.
Yeah, use the code GLEN20 and save yourself $20. I mean, and remember, this is one of those things where the mainstream media is not going to look into these things. You're not going to have... There's no one to do it if we don't do it, and we could use your help. If we do it together, it can actually get done. People can find out the truth on this.
And there's
so
some
your
really,
support is important.
Really brave journalists that have taken the story this far, and quite honestly, we've talked to them. Some of them are afraid for their life, and we're going to be furthering this story in a couple of weeks. I'm going on vacation, and when I get back, our researchers are going to be working those entire 2 weeks working on furthering this story, and I think you're going to be shocked at what we come up with. Just what we've come up with in the last 48 hours is remarkable. This story has just begun. So please join us at Blaze TV. Remember, blazetv.com/Glenn, and use the promo code GLEN20 and save $20. But that is good only for, I don't even know, 42.
Until, I think this weekend.
Yeah, 48 or 72 hours coming up. Okay, I worked really hard last night. Got a great show for you.
But... we're gonna... there was a big surprise that you didn't know was coming, and I'm so proud of it.
I didn't know.
We get to it in the first couple of minutes of the show. Just listen.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
You know, Glenn, before we get into all this, we should point out that this is a pretty big day. This is a pretty big day today.
Pretty big day.
Huge day.
Huge day.
A historic day.
Historic.
Historic. That's right. All right. That's right. We have a little song here we'd like to give you, Glenn, to commemorate this wonderful day. Do we have that ready?
What day is it?
Do we have that ready? The song, the first song.
What day is it?
Do we have it?
We don't know.
Do we have it? Oh, here we go. This will celebrate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Here we go now. Happy racist anniversary to you. You went on Fox News and called the president a racist. Happy 10-year racist anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Oh, applause, everyone.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you so much.
Anthony Newitt, I'm guessing, yes. Behind the piano. It's,
and it is your 10-year.
Oh, my gosh. And there's cake and hats.
Cake and hats.
Oh.
We didn't want to get white hats because it would look like a KKK hood. We didn't think that was a good idea.
Yeah, they are pointy hats. I don't know if the silver is and a balloon.
Slightly better.
It's fantastic.
It is your 10-year racist anniversary, technically Sunday, 10 years ago.
10 years ago.
You went on Fox News and called President Obama a racist. Congratulations.
I was the first.
Glenn.
I was a trendsetter.
You sure were, Glenn. 10 years. Who can believe?
Back then, nobody was calling anyone the president in the Oval Office a racist.
Yeah, try to get the balloons away from the candles, please. Thank you.
Now everybody is doing it. Okay,
Glenn, you know, 10 years, who can believe it's been that long, but it's true. Sunday will be exactly 10 years since you went on Fox News and called then President Obama a racist. Oh, wow.
Thank you.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Oh, it's been a... look at that. A happy racist anniversary.
Yes.
Glenn, it says that on the cake.
With shockingly, we had to do that one custom. The cake shop would not do it for us. Stunningly.
Really? Could we sue them and make money?
Oh, my gosh. That's right. You're supposed to make every cake for every person.
That's right.
Okay. Well, let's take a moment here as you blow out the candles, Glenn, and look back at that moment.
What am I wishing for? I can't say it out loud or it won't come true.
Ooh, that's right. Oh, it's all over your face. It was death, wasn't it? Okay, let's look back.
You said it out loud. Now it won't happen.
In 2009, here's Glenn Beck on the Fox News Channel.
You better get that ready because on Thursday night, 6 o'clock at the White House, they're going to have a beer fest.
Is unbelievable.
Why?
That is why?
Yeah, why?
For a teaching lesson, some sort of a who needs to learn what here? This president, I think, has exposed himself as a guy over and over and over again who has a deep-seated hatred for white people or the white culture. I don't know what it is, but you can't sit in a pew with Jeremiah Wright for 20 years and not hear some of that stuff and not have it wash over. What kind of president of the United States immediately jumps on the police? Just like, what kind of president would ever say, oh, well, yeah, well, he's black. Of course he was breaking into the house. You'd never do that. You'd never do that. Right. He wanted to address this. Now they're going to have a beer? That's obscene.
You can't say he doesn't like white people. David Axelrod's white. Rahm Emanuel's his chief of staff are white. I think 70% of the people that we see every day are white. Robert Gibbs is white.
I'm not saying that he doesn't like white people. I'm saying he has a problem. This guy is, I believe, a racist.
Oh, no.
Look at the way. Look at the things that he has been surrounded by. Let's give his new green jobs are. The guy is, again, black liberation theology, a black nationalist who is also an avowed communist. He comes in and he puts that guy in. Well, wait a minute. How many people with this kind of philosophy do you need to have in your life before we start to say, show me your friends and I'll show you your future?
Right. Mm-hmm. There you go. Glenn Beck.
Thank you.
2009. 10 years ago.
Give us 10 years ago today.
Please clap. Thank you.
Thank you.
The Jeb Bush please clap moment. So thank you very much, and we hope you're good.
I feel so special. I didn't know this was coming. I'd like to thank the Academy for this moment.
Well, Glenn, you know, it's been an entire decade, and we can stop the music now. Stop playing, stupid orchestra. It's been an entire decade now, Glenn.
Oh, this sounds like a heartfelt moment. Oh, we have any heartfelt music? Can the orchestra play anything?
There is a slower bed in there.
Oh my gosh. Now I'm starting to feel a little bit emotional about this anniversary. Because you cared enough to bring this to me. And I didn't even know. It's an anniversary, sure, that I celebrate every year, but I didn't know anybody else was thinking that.
Well, this is a big one, Glenn. It's been an entire decade since you bravely broke new ground and ushered in an era where it's completely okay to call the president a racist.
Yeah, don't clap.
No, you can clap for that. That was great. People are excited. In fact, even people who were then critical of your important historic act at the time have today recognized your brilliance. And let's look at some of their work, some of it from back then and some of it from today.
I'm not saying that he doesn't like white people. I'm saying he has a problem. He has a... This guy is,
That's
I believe, a racist.
Glenn Beck in the news.
How is it possible that this guy can sit on national television and call the president of the United States a racist?
This president sees everything through a racial prism
now,
and may even have his own racist beliefs.
I wish we would just
then
stop this. Glenn Beck and people like that need to stop this.
The notion that now Donald Trump reinforces his animus, his racially driven animus, his racism, that he demonstrates it over and over again from the Oval Office.
Throwing out the R word,
then,
the racist word, and some other words are conversation stoppers. We're never going to get past the point where the Glenn Becks of the world will just hurl that out at people.
What more do we need to see or hear from this racist man? Not only is he racist, he is an embarrassment.
These are the Tea Partiers.
Then.
These are the birthers.
Yes.
This is the narrative. They want the man to fail.
Yes.
And now they're labeling, he's a racist.
But it doesn't make what he said any less ignorant or any less racist. Not racial, not racially charged, racist.
So as long as Glenn Beck is out there calling the president a racist or anyone else a racist, we're never going to get past this point of constantly reacting to racial flare-ups.
Do you think President Trump is a racist?
I think he is a racist.
I see it with both Glenn Beck and with Rush Limbaugh. These guys with really suspect racial feelings and perceptions are projecting their own hate and their own divisiveness. And it's the same sentiment, Chris. And it's something that
virtually everyone recognized right away. It is racism.
It's such a blunt object of racism. When you say racism, it's a big charge.
Oh, it's a huge, I find it awful. I think you have to be very careful with it.
And then secondly, there's the racial angle. I don't think there's any getting away from the color of people from Norway as opposed to people coming from Haiti, Africa.
I think a lot of that is simple grandstanding, making outrageous statements, provocateur. Glenn Beck
refused to show any moral courage when it comes to standing up to the racist comments made by the President of the United States.
I can't even believe it, first of all. Glenn Beck owes the President an apology. He owes the American people an apology.
And now if we take this additional, very clear racist thing, he's an evil man.
This is an insult to our democracy, our way of life.
The President of the United States is racist.
Just in from Glenn Beck, Obama's a racist. It gets worse every day, and the worst part is that people are getting paid to say this kind of stuff.
Not since Woodrow Wilson showed Birth of a Nation in the White House has an American president been so flagrant in his racial messaging as this one.
But I also think it's worth pointing out that you weren't just talking about Barack Obama and calling him a racist. You were calling the President of the United States. So you were basically being oblivious or dismissive of the position that he holds and the integrity that comes along with it. You wouldn't say that about anybody else. You'd be highly reluctant to do so.
Of course, this is about race. When it comes to questioning the intelligence of folks, he reserves that for folks from the minority community. Now, why would he do that? Of course, race has something to do with it.
I hate giving someone who says something like that any more attention. Outrageous is one way of putting it. I would say irresponsible.
If you put Haiti next to Norway, as Donnie said, is a black and white issue, the way the president laid it out yesterday.
If someone on the left had called George Bush a racist on TV, would we be throwing our hands up? Would we be so outraged?
Yes.
Would we demand an apology?
Yes.
We would?
I would.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Really?
Yeah.
I would.
They all agreed. They would.
They would.
Wow.
Oh,
looking
my gosh.
Back.
Oh, it's been an amazing 10 years. Mm. I want to thank Jesus. I want to thank my family. And I want to thank my, I was about to say my clan, but I don't mean it that way. I mean my family members, my extended family members.
Your kin might be a kin. Better.
Kin!
That might be better.
Kin, okay.
Better way to go.
I knew it started with a K.
Well, congratulations. You want to take a one-minute break, and we'll come back with more from your...
Oh, there's more?
Oh, there's even more.
Oh, my gosh. This is so special. I feel so honored on my 10th happy racist-versary.
That's great.
More to come. Thank you, Stu. This means the world to me.
Well, Glenn, to be clear, welcome back to the 10th annual Glenn Beck Racistversary Spectacular.
Wow.
Yes. Why doesn't anyone clap when
there.
I go, there we go, thank you.
It's
thank
a delay.
You.
It's a very big auditorium.
It is. They're all there. The first 1,000 rows are empty. So
nobody wanted to get too close to the stage.
We're going to be smashing watermelons later on. But first, here we go with, you know, Glenn... As we celebrate your 10th.
I noticed you picked watermelons, you racist.
Oh my God, that's right. I didn't even think of that.
Wow.
See, you've ushered in a spectacular age of accusing people of racism. It's been something that I think is you're going to look back on your career and be very proud of.
I already am.
Your groundbreaking achievements have not just made it okay to call the president a racist, but today, just 10 years later, it's encouraged. In fact, if you're a journalist, back in the day, you used to not insert your opinions into such matters, but now it's required of you as a journalist to call the president a racist, and that, my friend, is your true legacy. Yes, it is.
You.
No, that's how it's people are going to remember you, I promise. Let's look back at just a small sampling of the era you, sir, are completely responsible for ushering
Wait
in.
Wait a minute.
Tonight, the great national debate about is Donald Trump a racist, appears to be over.
Mm. This is a guy who is worse than a racist.
Do you think Donald Trump is racist?
I do. I do.
That is pure racism.
Half of Americans find the president of the United States to be racist.
This is full-on racist. He has said many
racist things.
It is so racist and so offensive.
Straight up racist.
Donald Trump talks like a racist, thinks like a racist.
This guy is an outright, overt, flagrant racist. Yeah, he's a racist.
He is a racist through and through.
It's racist and xenophobic playbook.
It's old school racism minus the school.
Nobody wants to go work for a racist.
He's a racist.
Call him the racist he is.
His history of racism.
Today, President Trump is not backing away from his stunningly racist attack on a group of minority members of Congress.
The president is a racist, and he is a demagogue. That is just a fact.
You have said a lot of racist things.
That kind of racism is coming from the president's Twitter feed.
An overt racist, exactly like his father.
Donald Trump, what's it say?
I think he's a racist.
So you definitely would agree that he's a racist.
I do, yes.
Blatantly racist attack.
Donald Trump's racism will be very clear to historians.
Donald Trump is racist.
Racist.
The racist.
His racism.
Racist.
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 It's racist.
Racism.
Don't call me racist.
Racist.
Racist outburst of racism. Racist. Racist attacks. Racist. A racist president. A racist.
There's no bigger story in the country right now.
Actually, yeah. I think there is.
Really?
I would just like to point out, Russia is still trying to interfere with our elections.
Mm-hmm.
Iran is doing the same thing.
Well, at least there's not Ebola.
Well, there is Ebola. It's broken through all kinds of new borders. Big, deadly Ebola bleed from the eyes.
No new missile launches from North Korea, right?
They just launched
it. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they just launched a new missile.
That doesn't sound good. That doesn't sound good. At least there's no earthquakes on the way.
Actually, that wouldn't be too common in California. But, hey. There is no bigger story than, is Donald Trump a racist?
Mm-hmm. Well, it's apparently true.
Yeah.
And it's all because of you. Thank you so much, Glenn Beck, who ushered in Racism Central. It's always okay. And here's the thing. You are the only one out of all those people who called the president a racist who was then accused of racism himself because of it. So that's a whole new, that's sort of a moment of crossing a border that no one else was able to
Thank
do.
You.
You're still
Thank
the
you.
Groundbreaking guy in this.
Thank you. I did from the Tribeca Film Festival. I did get the award for Disruptor of the Year. So
true.
So,
by the way, did you notice your cake is white?
Yeah, and it has black frosting.
Mm-hmm. We were going to do white frosting, but then we thought that it wouldn't really work.
Why would you use white? You racist.
Oh yeah.
See, it still works. Works for everything.
You could call everyone a racist for everything.
That's right.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, it's Glenn, and if you like what you hear on the program, you should check out Pat Gray Unleashed. His podcast is available wherever you download your favorite podcast. If I'm not on the air on Monday, you'll know why. It was this show.
But wait.
Hmm?
You're going to be on vacation next week, so.
Okay, well, the week after that.
Oh, okay. That's fine then.
Yeah, you'll know.
Then we'll know.
This show.
Mm-hmm.
All right, here it is. Here it is. The FBI has found bodies sewn together like Frankenstein in a human chop shop in Arizona. That's the headline. Buckets of body parts, a cooler filled with male genitalia, and a woman's head sewn onto a male torso like Frankenstein were found by FBI agents during a raid on an Arizona body donation center, a new lawsuit reveals. The stomach-churning scene was discovered by FBI agents at the Biological Resource Center. The details of the grim find were revealed in a lawsuit filed against the center this week by 33 defendants whose loved ones' bodies were donated to the facility under the guise that they would be used for scientific purposes. They described the scene as various unsettling scenes that awaited the cops, buckets of heads, arms and legs, and a cooler filled with male genitalia. They also found infected heads, a small woman's head, also sewn to the male torso. Now, here's the thing. You read through all of this, and then the very last paragraph is this. In 2017, Arizona passed a law that said body donation companies are not allowed to operate without a license, but it has not yet been implemented. So let me just see if I have this right. To cut someone's hair, you need a license. To open a restaurant, you need a license. But if I want to come and pick up your dead bodies from your relatives, nah. Nothing to see here.
Now, the free market at work in that free, instance.
Yeah, let's not slow the free market down on the dead body collection. That's insane.
That is crazy.
Spend less time in the hair and beauty section, Arizona, and maybe concentrate a little bit more on the dead body chop shops.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Welcome, Mr. Bill O'Reilly. How are you, sir?
I'm exhausted.
You're
exhausted, Beck, yes.
Exhausted.
Very big week, and now I'm going to relax today.
You're
going to
relax today? Are
yeah,
you
after this. This is always agita for me, but after this, I'm going to relax.
Yeah, okay. Do you have anything up in your house, the tree, or anything to celebrate the 10th anniversary? I should say it's the 10th racist anniversary of me on Fox News saying I think Obama might be a racist.
Well, I remember the day.
Don't we all, Bill?
I was trying to tutor you back, as you remember.
Yeah.
10 years ago, I was at Fox, and so were you.
Yeah.
And you were on in the afternoon, and of course, I was the primetime star of everything. And I was trying to take you along, and you know, give you little pointers and things like that.
Yeah. You actually. Hang on just a second. So people know this is true with Bill. Bill was. People sometimes, and it used to kill me when we were working together on TV, they would go, you know, Bill is really not your friend. And I'm like, you don't know Bill. Bill actually was probably the most friendly to my career and the most helpful out of anyone in television.
And also a much bigger star.
Well, I was trying to help Beck, and by doing that, sometimes I had to criticize him. And that's why you had these little people who loved Beck saying, oh, he's not your friend. But we always did it in a very funny way, and Beck appeared on The Factor, and we had very good discussions. So then in the morning, he goes on Fox and Friends, always trouble to go on Fox and Friends. And then he says, because of the Gates incident in Cambridge, Massachusetts, that he believed that President Obama have some animus toward white people. Now, as soon as I heard it, I went, Beck, no.
I think your words may have been something like, you could have had a long career.
You know, I had you on. I don't know whether you remember this, but I had you on The Factor shortly after that, and I scolded you in the sense that, but my take on it was different than the actual statement. I mean, I wouldn't have made the statement, but I knew that the forces of evil that wanted to destroy Beck were just given a cannon, a huge cannon.
Yep.
And that's what I was concerned about. Now, I must tell your audience that I don't believe Barack Obama is a racist, and I know him more than casually. I've spoken to him on a number of occasions, and I've observed him in settings. I don't believe that he's a racist, but I know that he and his wife harbor resentment toward the white-dominated culture in America.
I agree with you, and I corrected this pretty quickly. It's not that he was a racist. What I was trying to understand, and I didn't understand it at the time, is his postmodernist view and his anti-colonialist view. He is an anti-colonialist, and that makes you very, hostile to much of the Western world's history.
Well, he despises Winston Churchill.
I know.
Barack Obama does. He'll never say that, but when you put the bust of Winston Churchill in the men's room, I mean, that's a signal.
Right, right.
That's a signal.
Right.
And not even on display, in a stall.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So anyway, but that's complicated, Beck. And what I was trying to tell you then 10 years ago, and I continue to try to tell you now, is that we don't live in an age where anyone takes the time to really investigate what is said and put it into context.
Yeah.
We live in an age where assassins on the internet will cut your throat in a second for anything.
Yeah.
Therefore, your analysis has to be, quote unquote, protective. You have to say what you mean or you're not going to have an audience. And I certainly have, and I have done that my whole career. But I learned a lesson the hard way that I have to say it in a way that is so factual that there's not going to be any opportunity for the liars to make any. They're going to still do it, but to gain any traction. And that's why The United States of Trump, the upcoming book on Trump, the history book, was so hard to write.
Hey, I got it. I'm going to read it over the next couple of weeks. I can't wait to read it because then I'm just going to read it. Oh, well, I'll be reading a chapter a day.
When you go to Australia, you're going to read it, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, Bill,
yeah.
Let's look at what happened this weekend or this week. Was Mueller's testimony just, if you're a Democrat, cringeworthy?
Okay, let me cut through this because I have a massive headache. When I said I was exhausted, this is what has exhausted me, this Mueller thing. Now,
by the way, for the audience to know, this is Bill at his happiest. All right, go ahead.
That's right. I'm because I'm supine talking to you. Word of the day for Stu, supine.
Thank you.
So Mueller gets out there, okay? And I told my audience that I believe Mueller's a patriot, and I based that on his career, not on his investigation, that he's a public servant, that he could have made a lot more money in private sector, but he didn't, and he served his country. Okay. So I didn't know what was going to happen. Nobody knew what was going to happen. So Mueller gets out there and immediately looks befuddled. Excellent word. Befuddled. He doesn't look confident. He doesn't look like he even knows what's in his 488-page report.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the story. Here's the story. If you look at the original charge to Robert Mueller when he was appointed special counsel and went on the federal payroll, his charge was to uncover facts about a foreign nation, Russia, trying to influence the American election of 2016. That's what it was. Right? Are we all with me now?
Yeah.
Nothing else. Just that. So then, in his testimony, Mueller tells the United States of America, it was not in my purview, another great word, purview, to look at what the Russians did when it came to the Democrats. Even though it has been proven beyond any doubt that the Russians hacked into John Podesta, he was Hillary Clinton's chief of staff, computer, hacked into the DNC computer, and that the DNC and Hillary Clinton wrote major checks and sent them to a man in England who then passed the money on to Russians in return for a dossier that said false, defamatory, and filthy things about Donald Trump. And Mueller is sitting there telling the country, I didn't really look at that. I really wasn't interested in any of that.
So how could he say, his first statement on Wednesday was, we do know this, the Russians tried and the Russians are trying again. And is anybody looking into it? How can he say that when he didn't even look at the same group he was looking at with Donald Trump? He didn't then say, hey, by the way, they were hacking into the Democrats and they were also the Democrats were paying this guy who was deep in bed with the Russians. How could he possibly say that with a straight face when he left half of the trail completely unexamined?
One of the Republicans asked him that question, and his answer was pretty much, I don't know. Other people are handling that. Other people are handling i.e. the Justice Ooh. Department. The Justice Department. So he was basically saying, well, the Attorney General Barr and the Inspector General of the Justice Department, Horowitz, they're all looking at that. I didn't do it. But he never explained why he didn't do it, because that was his charge. He was ordered to do that. So then you, me, and everybody else are left to speculate why he didn't do it. And of course, all the conservative Republicans say he didn't do it because he and his staff wanted to get Trump, and they didn't care about finding out what Hillary Clinton did in the dossier or the DNC. That's what the argument is. Now, is that true? I don't know. It seems to be. There's no logical explanation from Robert Mueller about why he didn't investigate 50% of the story. Right? Is there any logical explanation why he didn't investigate 50% of the Russian intrusion? No. No, there isn't. So once that was established, all that Robert Mueller had done vanishes, blows up. He has zero credibility, and the American people know it. The whole report is bogus. Every word of it doesn't matter anymore. No matter what Trump did, and I can explain what Trump did if you want after the break, but no matter what he did, it doesn't matter because it was an unfair investigation. It's a judge throwing out the entire case. That's what would have had to happen had Mueller been in a court of law.
Mr. Bill O'Reilly.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, that's my greeting for this morning.
That's great. Did you work a long time on that?
Almost all night, Beck.
Yeah. By the way, we're almost sold out on our cruise.
Is that right?
Yeah, we've only got, I think we have just over 100 cabins left. There may be about 3,000 people coming with us.
Can I ask a favor? Will you please get me out of steerage? Just put me up on the deck.
No, you know, I insisted because I personally arranged your cabin, and I said, you remember that scene in Titanic?
Right.
I want to be the guy on the right side of the cage, and Bill's on the other side. And I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't open it for you, Bill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm 6'4". I got a cabin that's the ceiling height is 5'8", so I need a little more room.
Yeah, well, it'll give you lots of time to rest, and it won't make you any more grumpy, I promise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's switch gears here on Trump's economy. GDP slows to 2.1% in second quarter, but beats the expectations thanks to strong consumer spending. Does the president, are you worried, and should the president be looking at these trade tariffs that are strangling the economy?
You know what? I'm not a macroeconomist, but I'll tell you this. I'll tell you a few things about it. Number one, this number will be revised up. And that's going to happen because, as you pointed out, Americans have money in their pocket now. Summertime, vacation time, they're out, they're spending. So this will be revised up to about 2.3. That's not a bad performance.
No, it's not.
You know, I mean, the economy's been expanding now for a long time. And now next week, they're going to cut interest rates to make money a little bit more available for people who want to expand and borrow. So I don't see any disaster coming. If there is one, that means Trump will not be reelected. So, of course, Democrats and liberals, a lot of them are rooting for that. But I think it'll probably stay where it is, maybe grow a little bit. As for the tariffs, I mean, he's playing a long game. Trump's playing a long game.
No,
he thinks he can, you know, break these countries so they'll make a fairer deal to America. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether he's going to be successful or not. It's not the greatest thing. You'd rather have a free flow of trade. But he wants better deals, and this is the only leverage he has to get them.
So let's talk a little bit about Iran and the tensions in Iran. Now we have Boris Johnson. What are your thoughts on Boris Johnson?
Well, I heard there's going to be a reality show about hair. Boris Johnson and Donald Trump's hair.
Is it crazy that they have the same color and kind of the same crazy hair?
And it's directional. I mean, I don't know which direction the hair is flowing.
Right?
So it's very fascinating. It's kind of like the cover of a Beach Boys album where they're all blonde and they're all
no, but it's a different color blonde. I mean, it's a it's a unique color. He was born in New York. Is there a chance that they're brothers?
Boris was.
Yeah.
At first, I thought they elected Boris Karloff, and then I was you know, my.
Do you know much about Boris Johnson?
I know a little bit about him.
He's great. Have you ever read his Churchill book?
No, no, I don't know anything like that.
Okay, you should read it.
He was mayor of London, and he this is what he did there, and he's an authoritative guy. He's not the strong point about Boris Johnson, and nobody really cares in America, but he cuts through the BS. He's not a standard politician. He's almost like Trump. Brings it to the people, populists. Look, we're getting out of this European Union. It's no good for us. I don't care whether they want to do a deal. I'm getting out of it. That's
right.
Why he was elected.
Right.
Okay. So he's going to do a lot more as far as moving Great Britain in the direction that he wants. But I don't know what the direction he wants other than getting out of
Brexit.
The EU.
Yeah. All right. So we have the British now sending battleships to escort the oil tankers out of a very dicey area now, right across from Iran. They keep hijacking oil tankers. So now he has sent battleships down to the area. Tell me what your thoughts are on Iran and what you think they might do before this election.
Well, they're disruptors, obviously. The mullahs want to create as much chaos as they can in the world. Iran is unlike Saddam Hussein, and this is an important point. Saddam Hussein was self-destructive. He did things that he had to know were going to lead to his own personal demise. The mullahs don't do that. They walk up to a line, they create as much chaos as they can, and then they recede from the line. They retreat. They go back. So I don't expect them to do anything that's going to lead to bombing of Iran. I don't.
So no more Mr. Nice Guy, I've decided, because it just, it's not working. Bill O'Reilly has The United States of Trump, How the President Really Sees America. It's out September 24th. I have a galley of it that Bill was kind enough to send to me. I'll be making copies and sending it out through my email newsletter. but you can order it now on Amazon or whatever. I'm excited to read it. And just so you know, Bill, Arguing with Idiots was one of our biggest best-selling books, and that's why we are doing Arguing with Socialists is my next book, and it comes out Super Tuesday. And it's everything you need to know about socialism and the arguments that, nobody is really making because nobody wants to hear them. It's made in a way for all the socialists in your life. All right, Bill, can you explain to me what happened with Puerto Rico's governor, and does it matter?
Doesn't matter. Okay, it doesn't matter. The interesting thing about it is that apparently this guy, Rosello, is an incompetent boob. And the federal government sent him billions of dollars. I don't have the exact figure in off the top of my head, to rebuild the island after Hurricane Maria. And he squandered the money, just as Trump said he did. And remember, Trump was accused of being a racist.
No.
Saying that.
Really?
But now it turns out that it's absolutely true. And in addition to being a total dunderhead in administrating for the island of Puerto Rico, the Commonwealth, the guy didn't like Ricky Martin. Now, listen, if you're going to make fun of Ricky Martin and you're south of the border,
right,
that's not a good place
not
to
be. Not a good thing. Not a good thing.
No.
All right. So what does this mean about our billions that we sent down there? And is he going to have any jail time?
It's stolen and wasted. Just like the billions we've sent to Haiti and the billions we sent to Central America.
Right, but wait a minute. Hang on. Central America and Haiti are not protectorates. I mean,
that's correct.
Right.
But who's auditing Puerto Rico? If you audit them, you're a racist. So you can't audit. You can't account. You can't scrutinize. And you can't criticize, because if you do, you're a racist. You know that, Beck. Come on.
I forgot. I'm sorry. I forgot what planet I was on.
I mean, look, the poor woman in Michigan who lost her crown as the beauty contestant, Apparently, all she did was tweet out, hey, it might be good if the African-American community looked at black-on-black crime because it's a serious problem. Okay, that's a fact. All right, and she loses her crown. She loses her earned status because she tweets something like that. We are living in a country that has now been overrun by political correctness. And I on BillO'Reilly.com, the most astute website in the Western Hemisphere, have predicted an uprising. There is going to be an uprising in America.
What does that mean?
It means that regular people, not politically inclined people, regular people, are soon going to be impacted by the Gestapo, which has now taken the form of the thought police. So in Berkeley, California, they passed an ordinance where you cannot say the words he, her, brother, sister, sorority, or fraternity and do business with that city. You cannot say those words. That is fascism. Colorado State University puts out an inclusive guide that says to the students, you cannot say the word America. We advise you not to say it. Now, the university is backtracked. Oh, no, we're not going to enforce that. Well, why did you put it in print? So all of this is starting to seep in. Now, it takes a while. Starting to seep in to the landscape of America. And I predict there's going to be an uprising against Me Too, against lack of due process, against politically correct speech, against punishment for people like the poor woman in Michigan. It's going, and I don't know what form it's going to take, but we've already seen that CNN is going out of business. All right, they've collapsed. And most of that is because of their insane ideology that they're putting on the screen, which includes political correctness.
Bill, what you're describing is something I've been calling, and actually special forces have been watching for this for, well, like 12, 15 years, something called the Bubba effect. When Bubba is just like, I've had enough. I've absolutely had enough.
And it takes a long time.
It does. It does.
But now when you have on television a Democratic debate where the major candidates all raise their hands and say to the American public, we want to pay all the health care costs for people who come to this country illegally. That's what we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
That goes beyond anything we've ever seen here. And you're talking about socialism. There is a movement within the Democratic Party to seize, for the federal government to seize people's private wealth. What you have in the bank, what you have in your garage, what you have as far as land is concerned. They want to seize it. Mm-hmm. 2%, 1%, it's called the wealth tax.
That's hang on just a sec. So people realize this has never been done in America, anything
That's
like
right,
it.
But what they don't realize it yet, Beck.
I know they don't. I know they don't. But I'm
coming.
Yeah. What it will require is for every American over a certain income level to report everything that they have. So it's your house, it's your car, it's expensive paintings, it's
your shoes,
anything.
It's the boots you buy from Beck. It's everything.
Yep.
And then the government will put a percentage on it and force you to hand over your private property to them.
Now, and this is why Great Britain collapsed, the system that they had. This is why you don't have like Downton Abbey anymore. And I know this is over the top kind of look at it, but because every generation has to pay the wealth tax. And they can't afford it. The family could afford
it. It's unconstitutional here.
Right.
But you never know with the Supreme Court, you know, now the way it is, and that's thanks to Trump, they wouldn't get this through and it'd be challenged. But you said something about Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and Kamala Harris and all of these people would sign a wealth tax if they were president in 2 seconds. And Americans still don't understand this. Even if you're not wealthy, even if you're living in a tenement and you don't have any money, if you really believe in this country and freedom, you can't possibly support that. Unfortunately, there are 40% of Americans who don't believe in freedom. They don't want freedom. They want the government to tell them what to do and give them stuff.
So that's the biggest, that's the scariest thing is we will go to fascism or communism at some point, depending on which one is going to grab the lever, because people will demand it as long as we remain insane as a country. When you can't
leadership,
count.
Look, I believe, and I could be wrong, that the Bubba effect, as you put it, all right, is going to overwhelm the Ocasio-Cortez effect.
Oh, yeah.
All right? I think that the folks, the basic working people of America, do not want fascism or PC or being told what they can and can't say, what pronouns they can't use. They don't want it. Yet, but we are so distracted. There is no, it is no accident that the rise of this radical left movement coincides with the rise of the addiction of the smartphones. It's no accident that people are so diverted. They're so living a fantasy life on their machines that millions, perhaps the majority of Americans, are not paying attention to what is happening. And that's when you lose your freedom, when you don't pay attention.
Let me give you one more thing in this regard. The mayor of Sparks, Nevada, told the Reno Gazette Journal he opposes the drag queen story hour movement, in which performers read stories often about LGBTQ issues to young children, and he tried to shut one down that took place Saturday at the Sparks Library. The drag queen story hour is for kids ages 3 to 8. It features a pair of local drag queens. It was a first for Northern Nevada, the Gazette Journal said. He's getting all kinds of heat for this. Houston did this. They didn't even do a background check. One of them was a child predator that was doing this. We have photos of these things happening all around the country where kids are laying on top of these drag queens. Now, I don't care if you had Aunt B from, from Mayberry, and she was reading, you wouldn't. You would question anyone who said, hey, kids, come lay on top of me one at a time. It doesn't matter, male or female. We wouldn't do it. We've lost our minds, and we're allowing this fringe to go into our libraries and do these things with our children. And for some reason, I guess it's because you're afraid of being called a homophobe or a drag queen phobe or whatever it is. Nobody's willing to say anything. But I'm telling you, Bill is right. If it continues down this road very much longer and the worse it gets, the more Bubba is going to say enough.
Well, I hope that happens. But the parents have to take their urchins to the library to see this display, number one. And number two, if the library is funded by the town or the village, okay, the village fathers, the board of selectmen, whatever it is, can cut off the money to the library. So there are ways to do it without saying banning or anything like that. But again, if people are going to let it happen, if they're going to take their kids to this display, you're going to get chaos, because that's where it's heading.
Thanks so much, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, Beck, go to BillO'Reilly.com this weekend. We have the best Mueller analysis there of anything. I know the Blaze was good, but this is so good, Beck. So good.
All right, Bill.
It's open to everybody. It's free for everybody. BillO'Reilly.com this weekend.
Thanks a lot, man.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
It's the 10th annual Glenn Beck Racistversary Spectacular.
Okay, I don't think we've
starring
ever...
Starring Glenn Beck.
Thank you.
And racism.
Thank you very much.
By the way, Glenn.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked a little bit about this. 10 years ago, it was technically Sunday, but this is the last show before your 10-year racistversary.
I hope there's cake on Sunday, too.
Oh, of course. Well, there's cake every day.
Yeah.
10 years ago, you were on Fox News, called the president a racist, and what we've discovered today is that you ushered in a new era of political discourse.
I'm a trailblazer.
That's you,
yeah.
Apparently.
By the way, you can verify this. Mm-hmm. I called Chuck Todd. I called Anderson Cooper. I called everyone I know in the liberal media... Mm-hmm. After the election, mm-hmm. and I said, I know you and your people are going to want to do things and speak out. Please educate yourself on who Trump voters are. Do not become me with Barack Obama. Don't do it. You accuse me of tearing the country apart. I'm telling you now, you will become worse than me. Don't do it. None of them took my advice. None of them. So I don't really
Which
have any sympathy.
Your life streak for everyone you've ever given advice to.
Thank you.
Congratulations. That's wonderful. Well, wonderful. Zero people.
All right. Thank you.
I think a couple of interesting things, because now we see that, you know, calling the president a racist is not only here, it's encouraged and required. Like, now, if you are a journalist and will not call the president a racist, it's a sign that you're not serious, mm-hmm. right? Back then, an opinion guy saying one president was racist was so controversial, it blew up the entire world. And one of the things that always happened afterwards, in the 10 years afterwards, and maybe you'll remember this just a little bit from every interview you've done since, is they will always ask you to this day, do you call the president a racist? What did you mean by that? I mean, are you called the president a racist? And it's interesting that you've had to explain it to every reporter that has asked you a question
still
about this.
To this day.
And what's interesting about that is you host a national radio show.
Mm-hmm.
And just after this happened, you went on your national radio show to explain exactly what you meant, to lay out your case. And I have not, since this time, have never heard anyone ask to hear that. Mm-hmm. Well, we found it. We went back and found it. Why did Glenn Beck call the president a racist from 2009 on the Glenn Beck program? Listen.
The media is asking me to explain why I think the president is a racist. Okay. Let me start with this. Since when did they need evidence before blindly embracing accusations of racism? They certainly never bothered looking for it, you know, when it was a conservative who was the target. I guess it's a refreshing reversal of decades of policy, but also there's also another reversal here. You ever notice that the one making the charge of racism is never the one on trial? Until it is a conservative that is the one making the charge. Before we get into specifics, let me say this. And this, I want to make sure those who count understand very clearly. I am not willing to bow before the king. I will never bow before the king. In America, we do not have kings. The president of the United States is not above the law or above criticism. I will never, ever say the emperor is wearing clothes. If he's not, let's talk about why I said what I said. Start with a low-hanging fruit here. Let's define racism. Definition: discrimination or prejudice based on race. What's discrimination? Treatment based on category rather than individual merit. Well, I've uncovered exclusive information about Barack Obama. He favors policies that will give preference to groups based on race rather than individual merit. Gee. They call that affirmative action. I call it a racist policy. He supports it. I do not. Period. But let's not focus on the tired old arguments of the past. Let's talk about the present. Let's talk about the Gates story. Here's his answer when he was asked about it.
I don't know all the facts, but that the Cambridge police acted stupidly. There is a long history in this country of African Americans and Latinos being stopped by law enforcement disproportionately. And that's just a fact.
President Obama needed to be quick on his feet, so he fell back on his principles. He fell back on how he sees the world. He made two points there. One, the police acted stupidly. Why? Well, there's a history of race problems with cops needlessly arresting black men. Not an exactly subtle tie-in. Number two, he didn't know all the facts. So he's making a racial accusation without all of the facts based on preconceived notions. Some would call that racial prejudice. Just because the accusation was made by a black man about white cops instead of an African American, it changes absolutely nothing. This is the prism that our president sees the world through. Other than being an accomplished professor, what do you know about Professor Gates? You know that he's buddies with Obama, right? Well, here's some audio of Professor Gates describing how he viewed the arrest. The first piece is just a quote. Quote, I am a black professor with a white man looking for a way to level the playing field. That's how he described the officer. A white man looking to level the playing field. Well, what about America's political history?
You know what those guys have said? I somehow, while we were asleep, all you white women and all you black people got into the middle class. We're not sure how it happened, but but the first thing we're going to do is we're going to shake the tree, and any of y'all who can't hold on, y'all going back. And the second thing, we're going to set up barriers so that no more of you all can get in here. That is
so unbelievably offensive. But let's not forget what the Obamas themselves have said.
She is a typical white person who, you know, if she sees somebody on the street that she doesn't know, you know, there's a reaction that's been bred into our experiences.
We've talked a lot about him trashing his own grandmother here, but more importantly, he sees the world as a place where the typical white person is afraid of those who are different. Also, this was bred into his white grandmother. Let me say that again. This was, quoting him, bred into her. Gee, wasn't Jimmy the Greek fired for something like that? How about this super classic gem?
And I really want to emphasize the word responsibility. I think that whether you are a white executive living out in the suburbs who doesn't want to pay taxes to inner city children, for them to go to school. I worked as a community organizer in Chicago. I was very active in low-income neighborhoods.
Again, so the problem is the typical white executive. I didn't know typical white executives don't care about inner city children. This is what he believes is typical. And what about his wife?
Let me tell you something. For the first time in my adult life, I am proud of my country.
The only thing that makes her proud now is that we're finally overcoming the traditions and the history of racism and embracing her husband. Well, let's look into those traditions and history.
And Barack knows that we are going to have to make sacrifices. We are going to have to change our conversation. We're going to have to change our traditions, our history. We're going to have to move into a different place.
Good God, America, I hope you are listening. So how would they define the American experience?
I don't like being pushed outside of our comfort zones. You know it right here on this campus. How folks are sitting at different tables, y'all living in different dorms. I was there. Y'all not talking to each other. Taking advantage of the fact that you're in this diverse community,
Because sometimes it's easier to hold on to your own stereotypes and misconceptions. It makes you feel justified in your ignorance. That's America.
That's America? Really shouldn't be a surprise. How could you possibly have a different opinion of this country when you spent 20 years marinating in this?
Barack knows what it means to be a black man living in a country and a culture that is controlled by rich white people. Hillary can never know that. Hillary ain't never been called a nigger.
And of course, there's this gem.
The government lied. The government lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color.
Does anyone really truly believe the president and his wife attended services with this man for 20 years and didn't know? Never heard these opinions? They are their opinions. My comments are not about the traditional definition of racism. Barack Obama is not going to be in some pointy hood. If we're using the media's definition of racism that they themselves have developed over the past few years, there is no question this man qualifies. But this is about the President of the United States, who sees the world through a prism of righting racial wrongs. His default position is to see white people as typically unfair, typically afraid of those who are different. Whenever you see people as a group, and you see that group in a negative light, and then you see yourself as the one who must use your power, your platform, your policy to reverse the social injustice, then yes, I think racist applies to you. But you still may disagree with me. And God bless the United States of America that we can still have the freedom to ask the tough questions of each other. But if you still don't agree with me, let me reverse the comments. If I were on the radio today and I said that the typical black person had a negative trait bred into them, would I be a racist? If I said that the typical black person didn't care about the poor children, would I be a racist? If I said that blacks routinely target whites unfairly, and it showed their stupidity, would I be a racist? If I supported a policy, or started building new policies that directed money and preference to white people instead of blacks solely on the color of their skin, would I be a racist? The answer to all of these is yes.
10 years ago, happy racist anniversary.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.